there, I'm LaFern Cusack, senior producer here at Promax BDA. Welcome to the Daily Brief Podcast. From being a competitive gamer before there was a huge audience for it, to evangelizing video before the games industry understood what it can deliver, to leading the YouTube initiative for gaming content as director, global head of gaming, Ryan Wyatt has lived and shaped the cutting edge of this invigorating gaming movement. In this podcast from the recent Promax Games, Ryan details that evolution and outlines what marketers need to know and where and how influence is being shaped. Then Wyatt flips the script and interviews Typical Gamer, one of the top creators that stream games live on YouTube, often featuring Grand Theft Auto. Let's listen in.
So my name's Ryan Wyatt. I run the gaming team at YouTube, and I wanted to kind of come up here and talk a little bit about the content landscape and kind of a lot of things that you are all dealing with in today's environment. So a little bit about my background. I actually had a unique opportunity to do kind of be a creator, esports commentator, player, and work on the business side. So in 2006, I started playing competitive gaming for Call of Duty, and I joined an organization called Optic Gaming, which is one of the biggest esports teams in the world today. But at the time, there wasn't a lot of money in esports or making gaming content, so I had to get a real job. And that took me to a company called Major League Gaming. So I ran our online tournaments there and decided, can't make money being a player, so I gotta commentate and work a real job. It was not the millionaires driving Lamborghinis like it is today. So I did that for a little bit, and I joined a company called Machinima that was on the rise, where I ended up running live in esports there for a couple of years, was streaming on Twitch, was uploading content still along the way. And that brought me actually back home as the VP of programming at Major League Gaming, where I ultimately got brought in by YouTube to start and run our gaming team. So that's kind of where I've been, and that's what led me here today. So I want to take a quick second to talk about the gaming landscape today. We got to wait for one part, though. Hold on. There it is. This was recorded in 1998. It didn't get uploaded until years later, but this is Brandon, and his parents ended up uploading this on 2006. To date, it has 21 million views. Obviously, it spikes around Christmas every time this year, but the interesting point that this would ultimately be one of the kind of types of content that defined YouTube, which we consider reaction videos. It'd be a big part of what the platform has become today. Next is a company out of Austin, Texas called Rooster Teeth. They decided to create this little kind of content called Red versus Blue and use the Halo game engine to kind of tell their own story. And this is the first episode that they ever created, and it was uploaded in 2003. So this is Red versus Blue. They actually are still creating this series to this date. They just recently recorded Red versus Blue and 360 on YouTube. So you can actually do a 360 pan. And Rooster Teeth has gone on to do amazing things out of Austin, Texas, and now putting their content on both roosterteeth.com and YouTube. But it was one of the first pieces of content to look at gaming capture, not just for the gameplay, but as a legitimate storytelling tool. This is actually called Machinima, which is where the company inspired its name from. This is 13 years ago in a ballroom where a tournament called Evo, one of the biggest fighting game tournaments today, which now holds place in Las Vegas and is streamed to millions of viewers. The only way you could have watched this back in the day was through a VOD. And yeah, it's true, you had to be there because there was no other way to watch it. So live content works obviously best when it gives people a chance to see something for the first time and a shared moment with a like-minded community. Evo actually will be doing yet another tournament this year in July in Vegas, obviously streamed to millions of people. But very interesting to see how much it's progressed. And Justin, who actually ended up winning that tournament, is still one of the best fighting game esports players to date. So pretty incredible after all these years.
It's a lot better than we usually do.
We all need to watch this. This is a classic. So this is obviously my favorite movie. This is This was originally published on WarcraftMovie.com because YouTube wasn't even a company yet. So this is content that is able to transcend the immediate community of a single game and become a cultural moment that's much bigger than just gaming. I think if you talk to any gamer and they don't know Leroy Jenkins, you should stop talking to them immediately. So hopefully you're all brought up to speed. And now fast forwarding a little bit to 2012, this is Markiplier.
Hello everybody and welcome back to Let's Play Dead Space. Who's dropping pipes?
So Let's Play videos are pretty he's a trip, man. Let's Play videos actually started picking up momentum in 2008, but it was 2012 where we had this incredible year where everybody started creating Let's Play videos. At the time, in 2012, no one knew who this dude was. He had 1,000 subscribers, but this series put him on the map. He now has 17 million subscribers to date, and this was his defining year, and it all started with making Let's Play videos. So also a very big part of actually what we see the platform today, the experience of playing a video game, walking through it start to finish is something that all of us can share and enjoy today. And now fast forwarding to 2017, there it is. Just gonna keep pointing
no tengo nada planeado. Y que de a poco siempre pasa lo mismo, o sea.
So this is a creator called El Rubius, a Spanish creator. He's got millions of viewers, his well-known household name, obviously, in the Spanish market. He decided, hey, I just want to go play Overwatch and engage with my community, and I'm going to live stream it. He live streamed on YouTube to 200,000 concurrent people watching, which is bigger than some esports events out there. So it just shows you that through these live experiences, it doesn't need to just be esports. It can be creators and other events, but it's able to drive a real-time connection between the creator and their fans and give them a different kind of form of engagement that they never were able to do with just VOD alone. So if any of you have teenagers in the room, this slide might not be that much of a surprise, but Variety did a study specifically focused on teenagers, and they asked those teenagers who are the biggest celebrities in their life, who do they care about, and it was from TV, music, internet, and actually five of the top eight people in this survey were gamers on YouTube. Gaming creators. This is a Variety independent study. I mean, it's incredible that teenagers are finding these people to be their influencers. Creators are leading the gaming content revolution. They're teaching mainstream media companies, game publishers, and us as YouTube best practices look like on the platform. So for people that work in game publishers or are in the content experience, you guys might remember not too long ago in 2015, it was just all about creators, right? So game publishers, hard to get a voice out there, always had to leverage creators to do it. If you looked at the top 10 videos in 2015 and you looked at just watch time, and watch time for YouTube is the most important metric, not views. Watch time is actually how long is somebody watching a piece of content. Views are very much a vanity kind of subject matter, so we actually at our company really never talk about views. We only talk about watch time. So we looked at these top 10 videos in 2015. Creators dominated the landscape. Then something interesting happened in 2016 where we're like, oh, publishers are starting to catch on. They're creating content themselves. They're starting to figure it out. How can we make compelling content that resonates with our community on the platform? And in the second part of 2016, more people joined these publishers, from Supercell to Rockstar to Ubisoft to EA and many others. They all started to catch on that maybe we too can have a content cadence that resonates with our audience, resonates with our community, and we too can have a voice. And looking at 2017, this is remarkable. I mean, if you truly have been in the publisher side of content, this is remarkable. The top 10 videos on the platform so far this year have 42.9% of the watch time is being generated by publishers creating content. So a big kudos to the publishers that are starting to realize how do you harness the platform in YouTube. And publishers like Outfit7, Supercell are kind of revolutionizing their marketing by making spin-off animated content series. And it's basically content that humanizes characters from their games. It drives huge amounts of time that fans are spending within their brands. This is another interesting one. Like, as we're seeing that the landscape is kind of incorporating live as well, I wanted to give you guys a perspective of what is Twitch gaming on YouTube, Dailymotion, Azubu, Hitbox, all that watch time, if you throw it in a bucket, 86.7% of it is VOD, where 13.3% is live. So live gaming watch time has exploded on the scene in the last couple of years, but it's dwarfed by VOD consumption. So when you think about your strategy, don't just be enamored with the fact that live's getting big. Think of how you balance your strategy between VOD and live and what that landscape actually looks like from a consumption standpoint. So I want to bring you to two case studies that I have up here. One is creator, one is publisher, and just kind of want to share what are they both doing that's resonating really well on our platform. So first up is Sybin. Sybin's a group of 7 massive UK gaming creators. Their individual channels add up to well over 50 million subscribers. And they've done a lot. Actually, let's go through a little bit of what they've done as a group. So there's them. They look like the New Age Full House or something like that. So they've done a lot of different things. They've had a best-selling book that sold over 125,000 copies in the UK alone. They were one of the first groups on YouTube of individual creators to rally behind a single brand name called the Sybin. And it's like, kind of like hip-hop. And so the power of this collective force was demonstrated in a genre-defining moment for them with the Sybin Football Club first YouTube. So these are gamers that decided to do an actual sport football event, which I think it might be hard for a lot of people to wrap their head around because of the stigma of gamers just being gamers. So we did this event with them last year, and we'll be doing another one here next month as well. It should definitely be bigger, but I'll tell you what, this was pretty big in itself. So they had 15,000 fans, raised $100,000 for charity, had 2.8 million people watch the event while it was live, and 13.4 million total views. This is gamers playing an actual sport. This is bigger than some sporting events of actual athletes playing sports. It's like, really, like, take a second to wrap your head around that. It had a 500,000 peak concurrent. 500,000 people simultaneously around the world were watching this live stream. So bear in mind that this was an event organized not by a brand or a third party, but developed by the creators themselves. We kind of enabled them, you know, financially to do some of the production stuff, but they came up with the idea, they came up with the execution. Really, we were there just to support them. And so while the match itself holds a view count of over 13 million, there was a whole host of shoulder content that was created around the event and after the event. And that's kind of what I want to draw your attention to here. So 13 million views, that was the actual live stream. But look at how well all of their shoulder content did away. So 7.4 million views was one of the players, Minimenter, that's on the Sybin, just recapping that live stream and like how important that day was and what a moment it was. 7 million people watched just that video alone. So kind of the takeaway that I want you to think about here is this is a blueprint for how publishers should think about hero content, whether working with influencers or just through your owned and operated channels. Think about not just how this content can be featured on different channels, but what different flavor and viewpoint does it make sense for the content to take on when it's being viewed through the channel. So that's the Sybin. Let's talk about Riot Games. I'm sure every time people talk about Riot Games, it's always about esports, but you forget about all the other stuff Riot Games is doing. And this is just what their last 90 days looks like on YouTube alone. 240 million views, 1,466 uploads. This is Riot's owned and operated content. This isn't UGC, it's just what the company is putting out. And see, it pays dividends because now they have over 13 million subscribers across their channels on YouTube. They have 2.3 million followers on their Twitch channel. They have 6 million just across all of their Twitter accounts. And this is a major owned and operated network of engaged, loyal fans, and it's driven by content. And what they do great is they put the players first. So Riot's upload schedule looks just like two of their main channels of all that content, but they take all of this different stuff around, not just esports, but how do we involve the community that's doing fan content? How do we involve personalities from the community to do organized shows and enable them to showcase their content? And the cool thing about Riot is they don't just do it when it's convenient, like they've got a champion coming out or a DLC or a new game release. And I think oftentimes that's where publishers make the mistake. They just start thinking about content, how important it is when it's time to ramp up for those beats. And the great thing about Riot is because they're investing all the time in content, whenever they need to dip in that well from a marketing resource, they have it at their disposal. So they think about it from like a user first perspective, and it allows them to tap in consistently with that with their audience. So if I had to have 3 key takeaways for you guys from this presentation, act like a creator, not a brand. Very cliche, but anytime I go in these publisher meetings and we manage 41 publishers from around the world, they only want to know about content and when to upload content, when they want to create it, when they got a new game coming out, a DLC, or anytime they're trying to sell something to somebody. If you are constantly creating content and you act like a creator and you have a cadence of uploading that has nothing to do with your marketing defined beats, it'll take you a long way. So again, don't let marketing beats define your content strategy alone. And lastly, humanize your content in scalable ways. Riot being able to kind of pull in the community and show that they have an ear to the ground, that they're listening, that they want to showcase that, that they're having a dialogue with the community goes a long way. All of us, including YouTube, sometimes feel like corporate giants. And when you're able to break those barriers with your community, it goes a long way towards authenticity. So last, I want to introduce a creator that we're going to bring up to the stage. It's Typical Gamer.
That's what I'm talking about.
I'd say he's anything but a typical gamer at this point.
How's it going, Ryan?
How's coming up, man?
Good to see you.
All right, so I got some questions up here. We had a good laundry list of them. I think we narrowed them down a little bit. But why don't you tell the audience just generally a little bit about you, when you started getting into content creation, and kind of what led you here today?
For sure, yeah. I started with making tutorials on games. I started with Red Dead Redemption, one of my favorite games of all time. And I just thought that some of the tutorials weren't done as well as I think they could have. Like, they weren't as helpful as I thought they were. So I was like, why not give a shot at it? And it was like, I think 2009, 2010 that I started doing that. And it started to pick up a little bit. And I didn't really find like my footing or my huge popularity, I guess, or the burst of it until around a couple of months before Grand Theft Auto 5 was released, where I started doing news on the game because I was super excited about it. And I thought other people would be super excited about it too, so why not just make news about it? And then that's sort of where everything took off.
At like what point in your life were you like, holy shit, I can make a lifestyle off of playing video games?
Yeah.
A crazy thought, you know?
It is crazy. And I never thought that that was going to be how things were going to go down.
Yeah.
So I was in school. I was taking marketing in college. And it got to a point when I was getting enough views and stuff like that I was like, I can make this transition. I thought, you know, if this doesn't work out, and my parents were totally against it.
Oh, I'm certain of that.
I was like, if this doesn't work out, I could totally just go back to school next year and pretend like none of this happened. But luckily, it turned out in my favor there, so.
Yeah, I think it did. tell me a little bit how the content has changed in the landscape, because even you, with your YouTube channel, you've kind of like evolved as far as your content on the channel. So tell me a little bit about how this landscape has changed just even in the past 3 or 4 years for you as an individual.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I've moved to mostly just live content, but with the live generating of VOD after. So I'll be live on YouTube, which is the only platform I'm using right now. And it'll turn into a video. And I would say that started happening around 2-3 years ago when my friend Hike introduced me to it. And since then, I just thought that was the best way to interact with fans and to sort of create the most compelling content for my personality. And it seems what people enjoy the most, since that's what most people watch for now.
What like compelled you to go into, because for creators on YouTube, it's largely heavily VOD and they sprinkle some live content on YouTube. What made you think, like, I'm going to go in full force on live in particular? Like, what was the driving force for you, and what really was that turning point for you that you wanted to focus on that?
Yeah, well, I've always liked live. I mean, I used to live stream even before I made YouTube videos on, like, the worst capture card ever. Like,
yeah.
You can even
see start somewhere.
Yeah. But I think that's... sorry, what? Say that again?
Just like at that moment in time where you're like, hey, I'm going to switch fully to live streaming. Like, what was the catalyst there that made you think, like, this is what I want to do?
Well, I feel like you get to interact a lot more with fans, and it's fun to get things in the moment. And I feel like when people are watching that and they're seeing the moment happening, it's not like you recorded before and you're by yourself in your room. It feels like you're there with everybody in chat, you know, the thousands, tens of thousands of people watching every live stream. Like, you're experiencing that moment with them, and that makes it a lot more special.
So working with publishers, we have a good amount of publishers in the room. What has that experience been like, and how's that kind of changed over the couple of years? Like, obviously working with Rockstar, you're a big Grand Theft Auto creator.
Yeah.
What's that relationship? obviously, whatever they're doing is working.
Yeah.
What has that relationship been like for you?
I think that it's a lot, it's a very positive relationship on both ends. I mean, they make great games, and I love playing great games, and people like watching great games. So with that being said, I mean, they publish a lot of content pretty regularly. It's easy for the content creator to not, like, strain too much to try to find something else. It's like they generate that content. It's fun to play. People play, and people love to watch it. Right?
Yeah, I've always thought it was cool that they do the, to that point, they do weekly live streams.
Yes.
And they actually have, you know, because it's Grand Theft Auto, I think they can tap into a pretty cool base of like hip hop artists and
others. Oh, for sure, yeah.
But you've participated in that, and tell me what that's like.
Oh, 100%. I actually helped facilitate, you know, the Panda song, right?
Yeah.
Oh, shoot.
You were a key contributor to Panda?
Yeah, no, Life of Designer.
Yeah.
Like, I helped get him onto there, and I did a live stream with him in person.
That's wild.
So, like, that usually wouldn't happen with anything else.
Yep.
I mean, but in that respect, I mean, I've done things with Activision, with like Marshawn Lynch and Kyrie Irving, stuff like that, and Deadmau5.
It's yeah, crazy to see a world where gamers are uniting with like athlete and hip hop stars.
Oh yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I would never have expected it, you know, 3-4 years ago when I was in school studying.
For the publishers in the room, what advice would you give them on what creators to work with and how to pick those creators and identify them?
Yeah, I think it really depends on the game and what they're searching to sort of get from that. Is it like brand awareness? Is it like driving someone to click a link? Like what is it? And then from there sort of choosing which content. Is it VOD? Is it live? Is it a mix of both? I mean, like with YouTube, when you go live, it turns into a VOD. So it's kind of like the best of both worlds.
Sure.
So I think it's a lot of, in terms of finding the right creator, I mean, if you've got a third-person game, a third-person shooter, and you see a channel that does a lot of third-person shooters, although it might not be the game that you're talking about right now, like that could something that the audience would enjoy as well, right? Sort of similar feel, a similar vibe.
Have you given any advice on content strategy? Like a big part of what, when I go in and talk to publishers, is the whole idea of thinking more like a creator, and kind of one of the beats here was talking about making sure that you have a content cadence where you're uploading your channel, you're investing the resources to make sure you can keep content on a channel. Like what advice would you give publishers on how they should think about creating content, and what are some of the people and publishers that you see doing it right?
Gotcha. So we're talking about on their own
channels, yeah, their own right? And operated, right? Their own and operated channels.
Yeah, I definitely feel like a lot of publishers tend to put out, you know, their main game, and then they'll put out 1, 2, 3, 4 DLCs, and then in between there's nothing, right? Where I feel like if they want to keep the interest of an audience year-round, putting out content, maybe not daily, but like a couple times a week wouldn't be a bad idea, right? And sort of focusing on maybe some community events once in a while, making things very interesting by always keeping that game in people's minds. Yeah.
What was one of like the coolest, you know, publisher things that you've done where you worked with a publisher and you're like, that was awesome, they did it right?
There's definitely been quite a few.
Give me an example of one or two.
There's always the ones where you play with celebrities and you're like, why am I here? This is like I play games. This isn't. But I did one for War Z, which is a mobile game, and I actually got to go like it was like a full like almost movie shoot kind of thing, and they dressed me up as a zombie and like. I got shot in it, got shot in the head with like a sniper, right? Sure. And it turned out insanely awesome. And it was just such a cool experience. It felt like I was on like a Hollywood set of like a movie, right?
So
it's really cool.
Like it's a mobile game, right? Like actually, I honestly thought you were going to go with like a Rockstar example, obviously. But you went like mobile gaming. That's interesting. Like how did that kind of go down where all of a sudden you're working with a mobile publisher and they identify you, somebody that is like a, you know, is gaming doing usually Grand Theft Auto or a different kind of shooter games to kind of bring you into the mobile games world?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Now, I wouldn't usually, like, for me to accept a publisher's offer, it has to be something that I feel like I would enjoy playing and that people would enjoy watching. So a lot of mobile games, I get a lot of sort of requests to play them, and even for like generous sums of money, but I'll deny them because I don't think it'll go over well with me. I don't think I'll have fun, and I don't think that the audience will enjoy it either. So something like that, I feel like people would enjoy it, and it was like a creative solution instead of me just playing the game, right? Because like I think some mobile games are great. You know, you pick them up, you play them for a couple minutes, you put them down, right? And I think a creative solution like that, it was kind of like, oh, I can do this awesome thing. People are going to watch it and enjoy it. Me as a zombie, I think that's cool. And if they want, they can play the game. I'm not telling them, shoving them down their throats to buy the game or anything like that. It's like, play it if you want. Here's a cool movie of me getting shot.
Yep. You have accumulated over 1 billion views. A billion.
Yeah.
A billion views. What are two things that you've learned along the way to 1 billion views that you would share with the room?
Yeah, that's an absolutely crazy number to think about.
It's wild.
I would say what I tell a lot of new content creators, people that are coming up, is that consistency is key. I mean, not only is it the audience needs to be reminded, like, oh, your videos are there. I mean, there's so many people that do this nowadays, right? It's hard to sort of get known. Where consistency, quality, and communication with your fans is very, very important to stand out.
If you went over and you took over kind of running the content team at a game publisher, and you know, you had a couple major games under your belt as someone who had to run that team. What would you do? What would your content strategy be?
In terms of like DLCs, like launches?
Just or... that you ran a content strategy team for like a publisher, like what kind of content would you want to create as a person that's in charge of like, you know, game making?
Definitely. I think I definitely rule the root of Riot Games or Rockstar, where you build this amazing game with such an amazing environment, a great platform that people enjoy and love to play on. It's just like, you can only play that so long without getting bored, right? So these companies that I mentioned, Riot and Rockstar Games, they introduce new content fairly frequently, sometimes every week, sometimes every 2 weeks, but it's enough that keeps you coming back and keeps you interested, and that drives microtransactions. I mean, Rockstar's got its shark cards, Riot's got its skins and mystery boxes or whatever you can open, right? And it's just stuff like that where it builds a good relationship where they just keep wanting to come back.
So live streaming kind of, you know, came on the scene. You were truly in, you know, the past 5 or 6 years, and certainly the past 3 or 4 have been explosive growth for it. What's kind of the next thing that people should keep an eye out for? You know, there's a world of VR and mobile games are on the rise from a content perspective. What are some things that you as a content creator in order to stay ahead of the curve that you're starting to pay attention and focus on?
Gotcha. I think that, the first time I tried on VR, it was just an absolutely mind-blowing experience. It wasn't like back in like early 2000s when you tried something at like an arcade and you were kind of like, yeah, this is cool, but it's gimmicky.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, wow, this actually might be part of the future. And you see a lot of gamers going towards making some VR content, and I think that's something I will be doing. But I think keeping a strong suit on live streaming is very important for me. And it's what my fans love, so...
Yeah, it's interesting. Like on YouTube, there's billions and billions of hours of people watching gaming every single month on YouTube. And obviously, we start to think about what the world will look like when people are starting to play VR games more often, or maybe they're playing mobile games more often. I mean, the mobile games industry is like a third of the revenue. How do you see kind of both of these, the way that these people are playing games, how do you think people are going to watch the content of these people playing these games?
Yeah.
Right? So particularly with VR, is it going to be 360? Like, how do you think about a world where people are going to be playing VR games, and how do you watch people play VR games?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I think that's a billion-dollar answer if I had the right one there. But I think that, the VR headsets, more affordable ones probably would be a good method there. And then also, I think a good feature is on YouTube where you can 360 pan on VR videos, right? I think that's very good. I think that's where a lot of it will go towards, for sure.
And for kind of any final notes for the publishers when they think about, okay, what kind of content should I be making? How do I look to the future? You as a creator consulting them, like what would your advice be to them?
Yeah, I would say definitely, that focusing on people enjoy has always probably been the main focus of things. But when you get people to come back, I think that's probably the most important. If you can make something so compelling and so frequent, although it might not be the biggest piece of content, maybe it's just a skin, maybe it's just something else, but something that brings them back is so important, because people have invested a lot of times, like, it's a big chunk of their income, right, to buy a game, right?
Because,
I mean, we got all peoples from different walks of life, and they really, when they pay $60 and then there's DLC that comes out, they really want to enjoy that content to its maximum, right? If you can keep giving that content, you know, maybe they'll stick with your game and continue going on there, and it can snowball.
What do you think so they do a great job of releasing kind of the content within games. What do you think of them, like, as far as how they upload to YouTube or Twitch or Facebook and all these different platforms that are available? Like, what kind of content should they be making to raise awareness around all of the great things they're doing with their game? Like, what kind of content compels you that Rockstar does, or Ubi, or EA, or Activision, who are doing all this different type of content? Like, what kind of content do you like watching from publishers?
Yeah, I would definitely say like trailers or sort of insider information or like videos on future updates. I mean, if you're bringing them in and you're getting them hyped for that update, that video itself is going to be a good piece of content, right? I mean, you got people looking forward to it, just thinking about it. I think that's really important. But as well as maybe get some creators who are popular on the scene of that game in on it to play the game, maybe on their channel. That wouldn't be a bad idea. Or on both, which would be the best scenario.
And last question for you, what are you looking forward to the rest of this year as far as games coming out, and kind of how do you think you're going to be building your channel throughout the rest of this year?
Oh, definitely. There's a lot of awesome games coming out. Red Dead Redemption 2. I mean, Red Dead Redemption was the first game I started on, so it holds a very special place in my heart. There's a couple of awesome other ones as well, and I think I'll definitely be live streaming a lot more. And on that note, I mean, a lot of my live stream stuff, the live content gets less views than the VOD, interestingly enough. So focusing on that and making my content while live, since it is uploaded to YouTube after, making it compelling enough that it doesn't feel like you're just watching someone go to the bathroom or, you know, eat snacks or something. Focus on that hour and a half, I'm going to be entertaining, and it's going to be something you're going to enjoy watching.
I know I lied and said it was my last question, but there's something to that, because that is actually an interesting point that you make. Like, a lot of live streamers will stream, like, 6 to 8 hours, right? Yeah. It's just they're like grinding a game out or grinding a stream out. You actually do very short intervals, but you do a lot of those short intervals. Why do you do that, choosing to do, you know, 1 to 2 hour streams with higher frequency than the 6 hours at a time, which is actually pretty standard kind of when you look at other streamers in the space?
Oh yeah, it's very standard. I mean, the method, the thinking of going into it is that I wanted to create content still, but I wanted to live stream it so that I could get my reactions from chat, talk to chat, and so that people feel included. So I would do it live, but as I'm doing it live, I would pretend that I'm doing the video, but for an hour and a half.
So you're very conscious that it's compelling VOD when it comes out.
I don't do anything that would be fairly annoying for people to watch. I just do it as if 100% it'll be a VOD, but also incorporate those live actions, which I think is a fairly cool method of doing it.
No, that's interesting. I think when you have to think about VOD and live to VOD, it becomes its own.
Oh, it's totally different.
Yeah. Any last words for the audience?
Thank you guys for listening. And definitely a lot of the things we talked about. I mean, creating continuous content rather than like 4 DLCs. I think that's a pretty huge thing. And focusing on YouTube and other networks to publish and create hype for your products is really important as well.
Cool. Thanks, man, for coming by. Appreciate it. Thank you,
Ryan.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate LaCaire-Marion and social media coordinator Kristen Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A, follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack, follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. Subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.